This is Radical Love Live, an ongoing series of podcasts and special events where we explore faith outside the boxes. Hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I am awesome as always. And you, my friend?
I am good. I'm good. As you can see my background, I'm on vacation, but still recording with everybody here.
That's right. So for our listeners, where are you?
I'm in the Outer Banks in North Carolina.
Nice. So how's the weather down there?
We had huge rain yesterday, but that's always something you get at the beach. But sure. Today it's sunny, probably about 88.
Nice. Have you walked on the beach yet?
Yes, with a big hat, lots of sunscreen.
Yeah. Yeah. You are one that sunscreen is your friend.
My Irish complexion.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
So anyway, Mark, what are we talking about today?
Kelly, I thought you and I would spend an episode sharing our thoughts on evil.
Evil? Okay. That's a good one.
Yeah, because we've talked about salvation and some other things between the two of us. But the reason why this resonates with me, I have family members who absolutely believe that there is evil in the world, specific evil, and go so far as to even see it incarnated into the presence of what would be the opposite of God. So whether you call that the devil or whatever name you apply to that.
Satan,
exactly. Could it be Satan? Huh. Yeah. And so I thought that's a great conversation for us to get into, both Absolutely. From our personal beliefs, but you as well are future certified theologian. I'm sure you know about this as well. So
definitely.
Yeah. So let's talk about it. I think I might just toss it to you. Tell me what in your own experiences and research and beliefs, what are your thoughts on evil?
I think that there's a difference between evil and sin. And I think that the two can get lumped together in some theology. But the notion of sin, even the word itself, is traditionally considered as coming from an archery term in ancient Greece, like the word that we use for sin, meaning to miss the mark, miss the bullseye.
Okay.
So sin, I think of as people being people that were imperfect and often stumble or get misdirected. Whereas evil is not something that's inadvertent. The evil is something that really is the opposite of goodness. And when we think about it in the world, looking at individuals, they're often motivated by what they see as their own good motives. But I think that evil still is afoot, meaning that you can look at, say, a corporation where there's a bunch of people working there that are each pursuing their own goals. They're each like, I'm here. I know that our company does some shady stuff, but I'm here to support my family and that sort of thing. But that the company itself as a whole, with all these different pieces, might be exploiting workers in some faraway land or destroying the environment or something. And right. That I would have to define as evil. That's evil that's being done. And it might not be any single person doing it, probably systemic. But I think that is at least an example of evil versus sin.
Okay. I love it. So I'm going to boil that down a bit and say that based on what you just shared, sin is not necessarily intentional. Could be, but not necessarily. It just happens because we miss the mark. But evil is intentional. It is purposeful. There's some, even though that may not be the result, purposeful in that you may be aware that it's happening. Is there a consciousness there that makes it? And I'm not trying to split hairs, but your example of a corporation is a great example for us to dig into, actually.
Yeah, it is interesting. And the whole thing that I got about people pursuing their own goals is actually from theater, that playing an evil character, if you just play the character as pure evil, it's just, I'm pursuing everything that is the opposite of good, it becomes cartoonish. But that if that character is pursuing their version of what they think is good, even if it's evil compared to the rest of the world, it's a much deeper and more realistic portrayal I'm trying to think of whether for individuals in the world, there comes a point where they're like, I'm doing evil and I don't care. Mm-hmm. I think it's possible. I think it's possible that a soul can become so disconnected from empathy that they're like, I'm going to do evil and I don't care. Maybe they've lost hope, or maybe they have some resentment against the world or against God or something. But I think that is possible. There are groups of people doing evil and are conscious of it.
Okay.
Sorry, I went a long way around the barn there to get there. But.
Nope. And I'm about to onto the barn door, because now I'm going to ask you another one. Nazi Germany, Nazis.
I kind of remember the principle on the internet, like the amount of time it takes for the discussion to get to Hitler. There's a known principle for that.
Funny, but it's true, because it's something that resonates for us of a certain generation. Although we didn't live it, we're clearly aware of it. And we know folks that were directly affected by that, either when we growing up, like my grandfather, et cetera. But the point is that, yeah, let's use Nazi Germany as an example. Everybody that was a Nazi, are they evil? And I don't want to be dualistic, so let me throw that out there. You could say not necessarily.
By the way, I did just look this up. Godwin's Law is the internet adage asserting that as an online discussion grows longer, regardless of topic or scope, the probability of comparison to Nazis or Adolf Hitler approaches one. So that it becomes inevitable in every internet conversation.
All right. So use it, and then we'll go back to corporate, because I think that's the one that's definitely resonates. But I'm Nazi. Well, how can we not talk about that?
If we go to the, I have to believe that there are soldiers that are just doing their jobs, or that were fed or given a certain kind of propaganda view of the world that was unrealistic, that fueled their fighting. It would be very difficult for me to say that the leaders of that movement did not know that there was something evil about what they were doing.
Okay.
Unless they were just like completely delusional.
Correct.
But now even then, there's a point where you're like, it becomes unjustifiable.
Because of their awareness.
Yes.
Okay. So I do subscribe to that. I would agree. This is a very reductionist way to look at it, but we don't know what we don't know, which like I said, it's very reductionist, but but there's some truth to that, right? If I am not aware of all of the big picture, I might actually not even see the evil, but I might even consider it to be okay or acceptable, or dare I even say good, right? Depending on how it was presented to me and what my awareness is. It reminds me of the allegory of Plato's cave, right? Where the shadow, and for folks that are not familiar with that, try to keep this short. The point is that you have a group of people that are sitting in a cave and they only watch what's going on in shadow. And they think their life is that, and they can't move. So what's being projected, though, above them out of view is actual people doing things that the fire is projecting the shadow onto the wall. So that, but for those folks who can't see the actual people, the shadows are their reality. And it's only when that they see the actual people, they're like, oh my God, that was never real. The real people were doing this. So it's all of a sudden your reality becomes unreal in that moment of awareness. It's not about enlightenment. It's about awareness. Those things are clearly distinct in this. So is that the case here? So you answered on Nazi Germany. So let's go back to the corporate aspect. So if I worked for an organization, no names needed, but some that do things that are harmful to the environment, or some of which for their profits, they have to do certain things. And I am going to call out FIFA, the soccer league. I remember seeing a quote that blew me away. And I actually have it as a quote in my framework of faith, and it's not a positive quote. But the point is that FIFA, in awarding cities, know that they have to make deals in countries that are going to benefit the soccer world, the World Cup. And we saw that recently with Qatar, right? Qatar. And the human rights issues and stuff like that. And so they acknowledged this reality that, and his point was, they prefer countries where there is, where it's a greater level of autocracy, not democracy. Because with autocracy, it's easier for them to make it happen. And I thought, wow, that's saying something out loud that you probably don't want to say. But he said it in a press conference. And I'm like, woof. Okay. I wonder if he heard from the FIFA board about that. Don't ever say that again publicly.
Isn't that, for many people, the appeal of the former president? That if you ignore all the rules, if you don't get a lot of people involved, then you get stuff done. And that's appealing to people who feel like they've been left out. They're like, I'm going to get a guy who's just going to get stuff done. Who cares if you stop stepping on the Constitution or breaking all the rules? So that autocratic, just get stuff done. I understand that as an efficient way, efficient means to an end.
It is. And we see it in a lot of our other countries, whether it's Putin in Moscow or Russia, Erdogan in Turkey, look at China. When you have autocratic systems in place, things do get done at the expense
for better or worse. Yeah.
For better or worse. And to circle back, what our conversation is about is that, is it evil when people get hurt, or not just people, like other creatures? I'm going to include them, or our planet. How do we even define the word evil in that case? What is evil?
Yeah. It's a good question, because I think for much of history, evil was attributed to people. Like, that person is evil or wicked or what have you. And it seems like the modern generation is very much concerned with maintaining people's self-esteem, maintaining people's sense of the fact that they are good, rather than this, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that kind of like brokenness of original sin. So that evil has shifted in definition, that it's less the motivation to do things and more the result. So that evil is this kind of like end product of selfishness or willing or unwilling blindness to the evil that a corporation or government or something is doing.
So you have if you see smoke rolling off the top of my head, it's because the little mice were running on the wheel, the hamsters in my head. I like where you're going with that. So if I have an evil thought, but I don't execute that, is there a difference? Because I'm listening to what you're saying when you said the modern generation. First of all, who are you referring to? Are you talking about like millennials and Zoomers, or who are you defining?
Oh, no, I'm going back like the last 100 years, or okay, like post Freud.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. So that's your context there. All right. So if I have an evil thought, but I don't execute, was evil committed if I have the thought?
I don't think so, but I think it was a reminder of one's potential for evil.
Because I have some thoughts, right? You know,
listen,
I know
you're not alone. You're not alone.
And I think the listeners, they're probably like, yeah, I guess I do too. And that's the reason why I asked, because I feel like, okay, are we supposed to just walk around, dare I say, Stepford Wives, and just be happy? We only have positive thoughts. And if we need to work on suppressing any negativity. And that's that toxic positivity, right? That's not in the lines of evil, but that's toxic. We as humans are going to react. Like, if somebody does something I don't like and I think it is evil, I might have an evil thought about how I want to end their evil, but I know not to do it.
And then does the oppressed become the oppressor?
Okay. Yes. That's true too. There's a lot of anger in this world, and a lot of it does result because of being oppressed. People can only take some. And is that evil? Let's go down that rabbit hole for a moment. If an oppressor oppresses somebody, right? So I'm the oppressed, and then I do something to that person. Is that evil, or is that justified to end the oppression?
I tend to believe it's case by case basis, but I tend to believe that it's justified, but that then the pendulum can swing or that those that are freeing themselves from oppression could be oppressing somebody else at the same time. And think about the American Revolution, that we were always taught that this scrappy bunch of revolutionaries freed themselves from the crown. Meanwhile, they had an entire workforce that were enslaved. That's not,
oof.
I know that's deep, but
that's a really good one though, right? Because, Okay, and let's go there. So you're absolutely right. In the context of slavery, mm-hmm. there are people who are justifying or trying to justify, rationalize, whatever word you want to use, slavery, in that the folks of the time didn't see it as being evil. Now, that's their opinion, first of all, that they did or didn't. I don't know how you know that. But even if you're not aware, is it evil? I hear you clicking.
Yes, there was a quote that I was looking for from Thomas Jefferson, because apparently he was a pretty big slaveholder, and he called slavery a moral depravity and a hideous blot, but continued to hold human beings as property his entire adult life.
Yeah.
How do you not know that keeping other human beings as enslaved people is not wrong, or is wrong? Or how do you not know it's wrong?
It's not a rhetorical question. How do you not know that's not okay to have title to another soul? Now, granted, we're talking in context of humans, so yeah, we'll keep it in that framework, but we could go further with animals and other living creatures. Staying with the human, how do you hold title to another soul like that?
Yeah, I believe that was absolutely evil. Mm-hmm. And that there were that the people involved were complicit. Whatever their culture was at the time, whatever they grew up thinking that things were supposed to be a certain way, I believe that there's got to be some essential part of the human soul that looked out over those fields and said, like, this can't be right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you familiar with, I'm hoping I'm going to pronounce it right, with Milgram's experiment?
No, I'm not enlightened.
This was back in the 40s, I believe, where he's doing a behavioral experiment and I don't know all of the details, but people were brought in for this kind of learning experiment. And they were told that every time they got an answer wrong or right, I think they pushed a button or twisted a dial, and it shocked somebody that was in another room.
Oh, God. I have heard. I didn't know the name.
And they increased the voltage. And you could hear somebody in the other room go when they pushed the button. And that the majority of the people, there were some people who were like, I can't do this. I can't hurt somebody else.
Yeah.
But when given permission and told that this was within the rules of the experiment, the majority of the people in the experiment continued to increase the voltage and continued to shock the person outside the room, because authority told them it was okay, or that's what they were supposed to do.
I'm letting that digest for a moment, because my takeaway is that is rationalization for the person that's participating to give them the okay. They were, I was told this is okay, so I can do this. But to the point of how some people said, absolutely not, I'm not doing that. I don't care if you tell me it's okay or not. Or the other ones are like, yeah. Is it like certain kids who rip the wings off of a fly or the legs off of a grasshopper?
We always knew that kid, didn't we?
Yeah. Just like, why are you doing that? But that is human nature, right? A dear friend of mine and a colleague recently shared something with me, and this does fit to evil. So within the context of conversation, I had said to him that I consider that humans in our souls, we are innately good and born into this world without original sin. That's my point. And you and I have had that conversation in an earlier episode. And he challenged me a bit by saying, okay, I appreciate that, but I'm not sure I agree. He said, I actually think that we are the meanest, smartest monkeys in the tree. And his point is that it is actually a conscious act for us to be kind, that primally, like we are wired to survive, right? We mm-hmm. have that instinct in us. And othering, threats, anything of that, if we don't deal with it consciously, then we'll do what we need to do to survive. And that's the point of his quote. It's not diminishing us by any means. He's simply calling it out that is there is a nature and nurture element to this, that we are naturally wired actually to survive and will do harm if we need to, if we perceive it or a threat, but we have to be taught to be kind. And I thought, okay, and I'm still processing that because that kind of challenges me in my entire belief systems and of just like all of it. Okay, but I respect where he came from with that. And then back circling back to the evil, are we born with the ability to be evil?
Yeah, I love that you encapsulated it that with your friend's quote so eloquently, because it's something I've been dancing around, but I tend to agree with your friend that we are not, I don't know that we're inherently good or we're inherently evil. I think we're inherently selfish. And from a survival standpoint, that serves us. As infants, we need to be the center of our universe and demand everything for ourselves. And I think some humans never quite grow out of that. In fact, I think that it requires some sort of real transformation to be able to overcome that and focus on good. And for me, that's my faith. That's the core of Christianity, is that it's created a transformation in me that gives me the ability to focus on doing things that are good, that gives me the grace to be able to do things that are good. But I don't believe it's the default. I do think that it takes some effort to do the good.
I appreciate your perspective. You're right. Maybe I'm simplistic in my viewpoint or overly optimistic that we are indeed born innately good. And it is the broken and fracturing of the world that makes us what we are. I also, though, that plays a little bit in this personal perspective, I've shared with you and I'll share with our audience that I use our former president as somebody that I had to learn to love through my faith mm-hmm. for the purpose that he does things that are antithetical to my beliefs politically, but also against individuals. But yet I also hold a belief that he and anybody else is not beyond the ability to reconcile to their own wholeness and restore. Now, depending on where they are in their life in this existence, I'm not sure that they can undo all the damage they've done. In this particular case, I really don't know how that would happen, but there could be a moment where somebody like him could say, oh my God, I have committed evil. I have done these things and I repent. I don't know what other word to use, but I absolutely repent for the harm I've done, and I will do what I can do in this life that I have remaining to undo the damage and restore where I can. And I think that's possible. That's the narrative of our faith. That's how I look at the core message of Jesus. The dude running around was like, no one is all evil. There's always that opportunity. And that kind of wraps up into that. So can somebody commit evil, do evil? Yes. But are they so evil that they're a lost cause?
Yeah.
On that.
I don't know that anyone is necessarily a lost cause. It's interesting. I love where you were going with that, because Jesus said to the apostles, anybody can love your friends, but the real challenge is to love your enemies.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. I remember after that election, it's as adults, we process a lot of nuance, but kids don't necessarily, they kind of tend to take things as more black and white. But I remember talking with our kid at the time to say, because they were talking about the world, they felt like the world had been taken over by something because of all the chatter about, oh man, this guy, he's terrible, whatever. And we sat down one day and was like, look, we're not crazy about this president and his policies, et cetera, but he doesn't have all the power in the world. And at the end of the day, he's somebody's husband, somebody's dad, somebody's grandfather. He's somebody with feelings. He's somebody that God created in his image and somebody worthy of love. And that was hard stuff for me to say at the time, but it's true. It's got to remember and put these things in perspective. And that helped calm the tension down in our house a little bit to have that reminder.
Well said. Thank you for sharing that, because you're absolutely right. We live in a binary dualistic, yes, no, black, white, wrong, good, bad, all of those binary systems. And this is it's just so deeply ingrained in our culture. And of course, I look at my faith as being something that's not that. It's always going to be both and, not either or, and that I know I will never know all the answers. So I just lean in on that. So that works for me, but unfortunately, we don't live in a culture that we're taught to think that way. So it's a learned process to think non-dualistically, which is what the dude was doing. Now I say the dude, Jesus, right? He was talking about that. Everything he did was about non-dualism. When you have yes, no, good, bad, that's where bad things happen. Because initially that means, because othering happens out of that, right? This is, if I say that you are evil, I'm using evil because that's our conversation right now. But if I say anything about you, I'm othering you, but I'm doing it most likely from a binary perspective. I'm measuring and I made an assessment. And my point is that, yes, we have to make evaluations on our life. Of course we do. But when it comes to the soul and to an individual, somebody else, I can't read you. I don't know everything. I never will. So to your point, when you're talking about the ex-president and sharing with your kid that he's a grandfather, he's a father, he's a husband, and there's a whole bunch of stuff behind that, but elementally he is that. And you said principally, he is a creation of God, a child of God. If you believe that, then that applies. Now that might be the one binary out of this, but to that end, before we wrap up this conversation, I do want to bring in Satan for a quick second and actual evil. As I mentioned at the top of this conversation, I do have a family member who I love dearly, but she absolutely does believe that exists.
Wow. That's a whole other, we could go down.
I know.
I think for a lot of people, Satan helps get past the question of how could God allow evil to exist? That if God is all powerful and all benevolent, how could God allow evil to exist? This then gives a villain. There's this guy on the side. And I tend to believe that the devil and Satan is more of a symbol of the fact that there is like this evil, destructive, selfish force. I don't know that narrative. There's the angel that fell down and became this other figure. I think we get that more from Milton and Paradise Lost, to stitch together a bunch of different stories from different parts of the Bible to make the cohesive narrative. If you actually go into the Bible and look at these different things, that the character of the serpent and Lucifer and Satan aren't necessarily the same person, but that it's easy to stitch them together. But if you look at Job, Satan and God were buddies. They were like work buddies, like standing by the water cooler going, hey, I bet you that guy won't praise you if you let evil happen. But Satan means adversary. So it seemed like a necessary, you brought up yin and yang earlier. So it seemed like a necessary counterpoint to the good of God. But I think Satan, though, can be a useful symbol. Somebody wants to avoid evil. That's one of the first things, like the baptismal covenant starts. And I love it. It starts with, I renounce Satan. That very whether clearly. You believe that it's literal or symbolic, it's the end result is the same thing. It's that I'm going to make that conscious effort not to follow my evil tendencies and to pursue the good.
Thank you for calling that out, especially because of the baptismal creed. You're absolutely, that's the first statement right out the box, right? Yeah. So I'm glad we covered that. Now to take away, go a little bit off back into evil and its reality in the world. I'm going to share what I think evil is. And then I'd like you to share after this length of the conversation. To me, evil is the acts of individuals, and I'm going to say human individuals. I don't know that others, animal species or plant species on our planet have the capability. So we're separate from them. Not that others species don't have same level of intelligence, like maybe higher intelligence. I don't know. We don't know what whales talk about. We can only like record and but I don't know. Maybe they're discussing their last interaction with some alien species as well. Who knows? Like back to this though. We as Homo sapiens have the ability to know evil. And we, at a level, intuitively inside of us, know what can be good, and I hate to use that word, but what is positive, maybe that's a better word, versus something that is harmful. There's internal systems in us that will allow us to evaluate that. And if I override something that's telling me intuitively, I should not do this, but I still do it, to me, that's some form of evil because I've done that. In a system, which we all are a part, whether it's a community, our workplace, wherever we might be, where others are involved though, and I become aware of that, I feel like my participation, even if it means that I have to just provide for my own family, the fact that I now know means that I am participating in it as well, because I'm aware. Once I'm aware, I can never undo that. Mm-hmm. And now I am. And so that calls me to take that to a higher level. And to that point about renouncing evil, I've now been presented with the option. And some folks might say, you don't have a choice. Do I? I don't know. I can't answer that. But that's, to me, that's what evil is. And evil, I will be a little bit more clear. Evil to me is the action of diminishing anything, whatever that might be, whether it's our planet or another species or doing anything that helps us at the sacrifice of another, because we are not the only species on this planet. We're one of countless millions of different forms, right? And so therefore we share this experience. We're not controllers of it, but yet we have the power to do that more than any other species that I know of. So that's my summation of evil.
Wow. I think that's a very insightful look at evil. And it's interesting to separate it out into, there's the systemic evils that you see in corporations and countries and movements. And then there is the question of individual evil. I want to go back to something you were talking about earlier, is in that we don't necessarily have to be binary. I'm not sure that your assessment of the human being as good is naive. I think that as part of creation, I think that we are good, but that because of our inherent selfishness, we have a potential for evil. And I want to hold both of those truths at the same time and say it's not necessarily binary, but that both of those things can be true at the same time, because I do believe that we are God's beloved creation. And so I wanted to address that part. But yeah, I do believe that evil, once you know that it is a choice on an individual level. And I do believe that some people can be so depraved, to use Calvin's word, that they've lost their sense of empathy or connection, or maybe they don't believe that life has meaning. And that can drive evil actions. But I also believe that we can direct our thoughts to the good. I'm going to pull up the Bible. In Philippians, the author says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever are things of good report, there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. So it's the idea of like where you direct your attention, I think, can help lead a person out of their evil impulses.
Mm, powerful. Thank you for sharing that. As we're wrapping up this episode, I'm going to ask you one more question that you and I both will resonate for different reasons, but I'm not trying to make it into a mic drop moment, but I'm going to look to our fellow Christian folk that in community of different types. So if they believe a harmful doctrine, for example, queer folks, something that I am a part of and you know about in your own family, if somebody others somebody based on their doctrine and beliefs, is that evil?
Yes, I believe it is. I think about all the examples that Jesus gave us of finding people that were outcast, that were looked upon as less than, that were othered in that culture, and seeking them out over the popular, the powerful. And I think that's an example for us as well to be inclusive.
I think that's a great way for us to wrap up this episode. So Kelly, I thank you very much. I always enjoy our conversations, and listeners, I hope you have enjoyed our time together talking a little bit about this. Feel free to share your feedback. You can always find out more about us on our website at radicallove.live. There's a contact there as well. Keep listening, and we appreciate your patronage here. And Kelly, as always, it's great to share time with you, my friend.
Likewise. Thanks, Mark. This has been a great conversation. Great talking with you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Radical Love Live, co-hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. All rights reserved. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and other popular podcast platforms. Go to radicallovelive.com to learn more about us, watch recordings of our live events, and listen to our podcast. We also invite you to check out what Kelly and Mark are doing by going to our websites. Find Kelly at kellywilson.com and Mark at markdilcom.com. This is Radical Love Live, where we explore faith outside the boxes.